Hope for North Dakota Public Schools. Welcome to Hidden Agenda, everybody. My name is John Roberts. Of course, David Waterman with the Midwest Public Health Coalition in the studio with us today. And guests, we'll get a hold of all of those and we'll introduce them right after this. Our show brought to you by Executive Properties. Are you still putting off that project around the house that's been bugging you forever? Do you think you can wait until spring and call a contractor and have the work done ASAP? Well, good luck with that. Executive Properties has openings right now to get that project done. In fact, you can check out their Google reviews. Aaron says Chris and his team did a spectacular job on the damage to my aunt's garage and siding. Kept us up to date on the progress, and the finished product was amazing. Thank you for your professionalism and hard work. Hey, get that project done sooner than later. Call Executive Properties, 701-330-1273. Well, I'll tell you what, if you have any questions or comments for the panel today, our number here at the studios at Grand Forks Best Source, 701-213-0863. Feel free to text or call 701-213-0863. And let's do it. Let's get it out of the way. Our daily segment called Jokes My Neighbor Tells Me. This one is gosh awful. I'm going to tell you that right now. Here we go. Jokes My Neighbor Tells Me. Just found out the company that produces yardsticks. The company that produces yardsticks won't be making them any longer. That wasn't so bad.
Good.
Let's go through with what I do, my little, what I call a monologue. It's really not, but let's do it. Joe's, Sleepy Joe's unapproval rating, now at 55.4%, his approval rating at 39.7. Now, when you look at the polling right now, actually, it's changed a little bit since January. Biden's at 44%, Trump at 46%. Now, in January, Biden was at 42 and Trump was at 47. So if you take that one degree, that one percentage point, and do the math, it's really, I don't think, that big of a deal. People just change their mind, okay? We're sending more money to the Ukraine in the tune of about $61 billion. We need that. Another thing, more local, Spirit Lake Tribe in North Dakota, one of two tribal nations now accusing social media companies of contributing to high rates of suicides that disproportionately affect Native American youth. Now, the Menominee Indian Tribe of Wisconsin is the joint plaintiff in a lawsuit that was filed Tuesday in Los Angeles County Court. Complaint names the companies responsible as Instagram, Snap, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, and Google. The tribe says addictive features are pushing more Native youths to kill themselves. Tribal leaders say Native youths are particularly vulnerable due to the complexities of Indigenous identity in the U.S. I don't know if I will agree with that or not. How about the Democrats sponsoring a bill now? I don't know if you heard about this, for abortions up to birth. And it will also eliminate every pro-life law nationwide. All of them. That's what they're proposing. How about this one? Building back better. You tell me if we're building back better. $1,000 tree stores closing this year. 900 Walgreens. 150 Macy's. 400 Foot Locker stores. 350 Gap stores, 400 Burger Kings, 413 Kroger stores, building back better. That's what they're calling it. Yeah. All right. You can go to Rumble, as we're now going to probably, I think we're going to leave Facebook and YouTube. But anyway, here we go. From the Midwest Public Health Coalition, everybody, welcome. David Waterman, how are you?
Good morning, John. I'm well. How are you doing this morning?
I am doing wonderfully groovy.
Good. You, yeah, I want to actually comment on something that you said. Yeah, how much are we giving to Ukraine?
I heard another $61
billion. $61 billion. And that's because I just want to just get this out of the way. I just have to get this off my chest. We're going to give $61 billion to Ukraine because why is that again? What's going on in Ukraine? The Russians are coming, yeah. Right? Yeah. The Russians are coming across their border into their country, and they're not wanted there. So we're giving the U.S. $61 billion of U.S. taxpayer money to help them keep out the people from their country that they don't want coming in.
Yeah.
That's quite a concept, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know, the funny thing is there's nothing to show what they have done with the monies already given them. And they're saying the leader of the Ukraine has pocketed a lot. A lot.
Yeah. Well, whether that's true or not, I find it interesting that somehow this administration understands the concept of keep those people out of Ukraine, but they don't understand the concept of keep those people out of America from coming across our border. We'll give Ukraine missiles and bombs and artillery to help keep their border secure. But, oh, I forgot. Alejandro Mayorkas said the border is secure.
Yeah, it's Joe really Biden really secure.
He said we have no problem at the border. So sorry, forget that.
Yeah.
Sorry, I blew up. So, John, this morning we have two very special and important guests, and I'm very pleased to welcome Dr. Jim Bartlett.
Good morning.
And Pastor Tim Stegman.
It's great to be here.
It's great to have you gentlemen here. So this is a very, I have a pleasure on two accounts. One is that I was at the North Dakota Republican Convention when Dr. Bartlett was endorsed by the Republican Party as the candidate for Superintendent of Public Instruction, for the Department of Public Instruction, which is kind of a big deal. This is the person who's currently holding that position. I'm not going to say your name out loud, but you are running. You're running to take that position, and so tell me. I want to ask you why you're running, Jim. But well, go ahead. Why don't you just tell me first why you're running?
Yeah, thanks, David.
And you, I'm sorry. Let me give a little introduction. You've been involved with homeschooling for a couple of years, 2-3 years, or maybe more than that.
Our sons are in their 30s, and we homeschool them all the way through.
All the way through.
But I've also been involved with public education since I was a child, but also I taught engineering at NDSU for 17 years and then directed the North Dakota Homeschools Association for 6. Right. So the way I say it is I can see inside the box and outside the box, both at the K-12 level, at the tech school level. I went to school to be an automotive mechanic initially. And so I also taught at an automotive tech school in New Hampshire and was on accreditation boards when I was 19, accrediting colleges. And so I've been kind of involved in education activities, adventures for a long time.
Yes, you have.
That's a lot of stuff.
That's a lot of stuff, a lot of educational stuff. So, and your PhD is in engineering?
Correct.
Okay. So Jim, I think that I think that politics, sausage making, and how the public schools run are all kind of in the same category. It's pretty murky in the minds of a lot of Americans, right, how that stuff all works. So can you please just start with kind of a summary of how the public school system is organized? I mean, what does it mean? What is the superintendent of Department of Public Instruction, and what exactly does that office do?
Yes. If you look at the organizational chart for the North Dakota Department of Public Instruction, they got kind of three reporting segments. And so one of them includes the North Dakota Vision Services, School for the for the Blind, and then also School for the Deaf, and the North Dakota State Library. Another line of direction is the Student Support and Innovation Assistant Superintendent and things related to that, which would be the Indian Multicultural Education, the school approvals, the assessments, the special education, and other academic support to the public school system. Another line is the information and administration side of it, so that would include the fiscal aspects, human resources, child nutrition, outreach, and things like that. But now that's the org chart. If you look at the North Dakota Constitution, it's more broad, so we'll start more with the superintendent position. Okay. And with the superintendent position, they start by setting the strategic vision for the public school system. And so that's really important. This is a huge opportunity to change the strategic direction of the public schools.
Mm-hmm. So is that the vision for all those areas that you just mentioned, as well as the content, the curriculum, those kinds of things? I mean, how much of that is... So how much of the of that position is administrative versus shaping the curriculum or the what actually happens in the classroom?
Yes. You start with the strategic vision, and so everything else flushes out from there. So if they're going to supervise the content standards, and what does a supervisor do, right? The supervisor helps get the strategic vision pushed down through the curriculum, through the teacher standards, and through the accreditation, testing, and all those things. So if you've got a change in the strategic vision of the public schools, you've got a major change on your hands.
Right. And why do you think that a strategic change in the vision is needed?
Well, shall we start in 1926? In 1926, J. Gresham Machen, he was the president of Princeton and then started Westminster Seminary as well as the OPC Church. He was saying to the Joint House of Congress that the worst thing that could happen to a nation would be to have a public school, national education association, and Department of Education. And he explained that the reason for that would be you'd be treating people like Ford cars, which were newer at the time. And so basically, if you treat people like Ford cars, you're saying, hey, the people do not have spirits and there is no God, so everything has to be formed from the outside. And so we're into something where there is no God, and so the entire system has been built on that since 1926 or before, if you think about John Dewey and others.
And that's and that's a mass production system, right? Where everything comes out looking the same.
Yes, right. So in his terms, he even said we didn't want to lose the idiosyncrasies that we have in the children. Wow. You know, so today homeschoolers get criticized for being different, right? And so it's like, well, they're different, and that's good because everybody needs to be different and grow up separately and individualized instruction. And the people are seeing that. You know, you realize if you try to force everybody to learn a certain type of math at a certain level, not everybody's ready for that, or not everybody's ready for reading at the same time. And so the system needs a change all the way from the top so that we acknowledge God and acknowledge that man is made in God's image with the spirit, and we shouldn't try to treat him like a machine.
So that's – so, Jim, when you say that, I can hear – certain parents right now saying, oh, I don't want my kids learning religion in the public school. And besides, don't you know there's separation of church and state? The Constitution says separation of church and state. So how do we address that problem?
Yeah. One little thing at a time.
Okay.
So first of all, we have religion in a public school. There's a book. I just gave it away, but I might have given it to you, Timothy. It's called Clergy in a Classroom. And it gives all the evidence to show that secular humanism is a bona fide religion, and it's the main one in the public schools. You could add in some Marxism, add in some postmodernism today, but that is actually a religion. Okay, it might take a little bit to digest the fact, but it really is. When I was at NDSU, I wrote a paper, took 3 years doing it, to say, okay, here, as a Christian who started and led a Christian faculty ministry and then had a ministry at our home for young married couples, was I, as a Christian, actually helping a secular agenda more than a Christian faith? And so my conclusion was definitely helping the secular agenda, even though I was a Christian on campus. Mm-hmm. And so the same thing applies in all directions. So secondly, separation of church and state idea. The Marxists do have a different belief than the American Constitution. You know, the American Constitution would say, you know, that no... the whole Congress should not create a denomination over the United States kind of thing. The Marxists would say that the children are owned by the state and that Christians should be silent. And they really believe that, and they have that thoroughly embedded, totally. If you look anywhere, check anywhere, that's been happening. And so you have to take that into consideration. The one more bigger picture point is neutrality, the impossibility of neutrality. If you can't be nothing. You can't have a school system that is not something. So if it's not Christian, it is secular humanist. If it's not secular humanist or a mixture, it's going to be Marxist. There's six different worldviews. And so then I like to go back and forth on this topic and say, well, boy, I think we ought to just have NDSU print the Ten Commandments and distribute it throughout the public schools in North Dakota. What do you think the opposition would say to that?
Well, they say you can't do that because that's illegal.
Look at that.
This is a copy of NDSU called the, Agricultural College.
Mm-hmm.
They designed and printed the Ten Commandments and distributed it through the entire state of North Dakota in every public school.
No kidding.
And it's not only just a summary of each one, it's the entire verses in Exodus.
When was that done? Wow. When did they do that?
Would have been before 1965.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know exact year that it started, but so it's nothing new to think about. You got to have a standard, okay? Which is another issue, right? We have a problem in the schools today where nobody knows what's right and wrong, and therefore they can't discipline, and therefore, if you ask the kids, one I asked specifically, and she said, the reason why teachers don't want to work in the schools and why they're leaving and they can't recruit them is because the kids are not disciplined and not listening to the teachers, and the teachers, can't discipline the kids. So it's like a chaos in the classroom, and who wants to be there? So you got to have a standard. So without a standard, you're lost. So in fact, if you look at the details of the secular humanism, the ethics aspect, it is moral relativism. So in North Dakota Constitution, it talks about morals. So is there a difference between morals and moral relativism? Yeah, it's like they're opposite. You know. So in fact, I should mention in 1889, North Dakota Constitution was ratified, and part of the requirements for education was to teach the kids morals. So if you look at morals in the dictionary of that time, Webster's 1828, it would show that the definition of morals is essentially the ability to discern good and evil. Mm. And then if you look up good, you look up evil, it's scripture. And so there's no other option.
So when you said moral relativism versus morals, what is moral relativism?
That would mean what's right for you is right for you, and what's right for me is right for me. And, you know, let's all just get along and don't have any standards that we have to put on anybody else.
Well, that sounds nice. What's wrong with that? That sounds very inclusive and tolerant.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah. Glad you mentioned tolerance. I do have a document from Fargo called the gender inclusion document. We can talk about after. But, yeah, if you include evil, it's going to be a problem. But if you have no definition of evil, that's even worse, right? Because nobody knows what's right and wrong. Mm. And so that's what we have in the schools today. Nobody can discipline. They can't say what's right and wrong. But this hasn't been the case in history.
Could I please see that? No, I'm sorry. The Ten Commandments? That's beautiful.
On the bottom, it has the short version, too.
Yeah. Man, North Dakota Agriculture College. Wow. Yeah, designed and drawn by the Department of Agriculture, North Dakota Agriculture College. So I just want to, excuse me, it says here, thou shalt not steal. Well, what if I think stealing is okay, but you think it's not okay? Should I be able to do whatever I want?
Well, that's what a secular humanist would say.
Oh, well, what about this
one? Depends on if you believe in the commandments.
This one says, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. In other words, lie. I can't accuse you of something that you didn't really do and get you in trouble for it.
Yeah, see, if people, they really do not believe these Ten Commandments, right? In fact, since 1980s, George Barna was doing quizzes or surveys in the schools, and we're finding at that time, like 90% of the children did not believe in absolute truth.
How many? What percent?
It was like 90% at that time. So today, there's another document that shows that everybody is coming out socialist, and that's the Christians that are going to public school. The kids are, the Nehemiah Institute Pierce Test.
So what's the... let's say we continue to go down this path, and I think that I think the Marxists really have done a remarkably effective job at persuading people that this is just the way to go. You can't push your. I remember when I was in school, Dr. Bartlett, I heard people say, "You can't push your morality on someone else, or you can't legislate morality."
Yes.
So what's your response? You can't let, but it seems like they're trying to legislate immorality, but I digress.
Yes.
What is your response when someone says you can't legislate morality?
Every law is moral. And in fact, I'd recommend looking at pocketcollege.com and look at the introduction, and you'll see a good introduction by Rush Dooney on that point.
Okay. So is that, whoops.
In fact, that would be how I would like to approach the legislature if I get in. Is to, you know, like they have fiscal notes on different bills, right? We can have a religious note on the bill. And even if it's not official and if it's just coming from the DPI, it's like, okay, let's do a religious note and say, okay, how much postmodernism is in that bill? How much secular humanism is in that bill?
Wow.
How much Marxism is in that bill? And even put numbers on it.
So to go back to something that you said just a little bit ago, Dr. Bartlett, that you said that there's no vacuum, right? So if there's not one religion, there's another religion that's going to be taught. So if you say, well, we're not going to teach kids that they can't steal or that they can't lie, that they can't bear false witness, then that means that automatically you're teaching them something else, right?
Exactly.
I think it's the Japanese or the Chinese, I can't remember, have an expression that it goes something like this. I'd say it in Japanese, but you wouldn't understand it. And I couldn't do it, but it's something like this.
To a take double dog dare you
to take an action is an action, and to not take an action is an action. Does that kind of apply here?
Sure. Yeah. Exactly. Well, think about it. If you don't believe in God, or if you do believe in God, you know, it's one or the other.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Sure.
So if you believe in God, and if you believe that God is the author of life and the one who determines what is right and what isn't right. Because, Jim, I've had this, and I can maybe I'm sorry, Pastor Tim, I don't want to leave you out of the discussion here, but I've had people say to me when I mention the word truth, you know the most common response I get just if I say the word truth? You know what the most common response is?
Yep.
What is it?
It's your truth.
Yeah, or yeah. Whose truth? They say, whose truth? I said, well, what do you mean, whose truth? Nobody owns truth, right? It's just if something's true, it's true.
In postmodern thought, there's a category of philosophy called anti-realism, and they really believe that. It's hard to get our mind around it.
Anti-realism.
Yeah, so there's reality doesn't exist, and it can't be found. Same for truth.
I got to write that one down.
So that's great. That's a little bit like, isn't that a little bit like the statement, there are no absolutes?
Exactly.
Because
absolutely.
Because the statement, there are no absolutes, is an absolute statement. So if you say there are no absolutes, you're contradicting yourself just by making the statement. Because that's an absolute statement. Mm-hmm. So if you say there's no reality, that statement is based on the idea that the statement itself is reality.
Yes. Yeah, Pastor Tim, he's got good experience.
Yeah, I'd love to hear your...
He's working as a surrogate for our campaign, too.
And I just want everyone who's watching or listening to keep in mind that these aren't just esoteric concepts that we're throwing around here because they're fun to talk about. These are principles that are being taught to our students in the public schools, mm-hmm. directly or indirectly, and they are gravely affecting the direction that society is going and have been for some time, only it's getting worse. So, Pastor Tim.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think about the concept of when you say, oh, there's no absolute truth, you have to give them examples. That's fine. I think it would be fun to take my hot cup of coffee and pour it down your neck. You're all of a sudden going to say, that's bad. That would hurt me. Well, it doesn't hurt me. Why would it matter? So, you know, we need some practical examples, like speed limits. You know, well, that's what you interpret that. I interpret that to be kilometers or some other speed relation. You know, we have to point out society believes in morals and absolutes. Just we're built with a God-shaped hole. When we look for something to fill that, nothing will fill that, like God, like morals, from the Bible, from our Judeo-Christian worldview. And I love how Jim is bringing these along and saying, pointing out the truth that we are a society of morals, whether they're good morals or bad. People can't say, well, I don't believe in that. I'm just going to do whatever I want to do. No, no, you have a set of morals. I can prove it to you with that hot cup of coffee. It would be wrong for me to pour that down your neck, right? Nobody in their right mind would say, well, that's fine. Go ahead and do that to me. They're going to run away fast. And so we point out with practical examples, and in our schools, we're seeing a degradation of society as generation after generation is getting worse and worse, and you see it in our politics, in our nation, really worldwide.
So wouldn't this be an easier sell for the parents who are non-religious or the ones who say, well, that's not my religion, you know, I'm not Christian or whatever. Wouldn't it be easier to persuade them that bringing the Ten Commandments into the public schools would be a good idea if there was any kind of historical background to demonstrate the value of that? If there was any proof that that's ever actually worked in the past?
Oh, that's a good one. Actually, I'll go back further. Deuteronomy 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 show that all the tribes that were not the people of God, not Israel, were envious at having, you know, at Israel having the Ten Commandments. And so we've seen that throughout the nations, throughout the world, where there's Christian nations, there's prosperity. If you read books like Calvin and Commerce, it gives the history of Western civilization and how it was the idea that there is a God. That means there's order in creation. That means it's worth exploring. It's worth scientific endeavor. It's worth effort. Kids and people used to be taught a work ethic. It was called the Christian work ethic. Then it was the Puritan work ethic. And then it was the North Dakota work ethic.
Right, yeah.
And today there isn't a work ethic, even though it is in the North Dakota Constitution. So there's There's demonstration. Then even for kids, thinking in the kids in the schools today are suicidal. In Bottineau, I was looking at the numbers, 18% of the kids are suicidal. That was up from 15% 10 years ago. And why are the kids so sad? Well, because they're taught that they're, you know, evolved from nothing, and that they have no purpose in life. You know, Christians would say that, hey, everybody is valued in God's eyes and also has a calling. And so there's a whole discussion about how to teach kids that they are called to do something in this world and there's a purpose in their work.
So you're suggesting that just because the public schools might teach that because you came from slime, you're not made in anybody's image, your life is really worthless, and once you die, you're gone, that could lead to mental health problems?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I gave a testimony just impromptu at an education committee meeting in North Dakota a while ago, and they were talking about suicide, and I had all the books in front of me that would answer it, so I gave a testimony. Wasn't planning on it. Then I wrote a paper to the suicide director of North Dakota saying this is how you could solve it. And she said, well, I can't use that because it's Christian. And so I took it to the pastors in Bottineau and says, well, they couldn't use it there. How about in the churches? And I said, well, they said the kids don't come to our churches, so we really can't do anything about it. So then I said, well, the teachers do, so, you know, why not them? And so then they looked at their shoes and went nowhere. But yeah, the kids are definitely hopeless in many regards.
So,
and what? There's a survey called the Youth Health Risk Survey Results. It's nationwide, and it's a long list of terrible things that are going on in the schools with the kids' behavior.
So let me just ask, Tim, I'm going to ask you a question, Pastor Tim. Did you meet Dr. Bartlett, a few weeks ago or a month or so ago? How long have you known Dr. Bartlett?
I'm pleased to say we go way back. His kids and myself and my brothers and sisters grew up together, and so I've known Jim a long time.
Okay. He seems to be, to me, concerned about the direction that not just the education is going, but the mindset of children. I mean, it's one thing to say, hey, SAT scores are down. It's another thing to say, we've got a whole generation of kids that are, where there's a significant portion of them that are suicidal, considering taking their lives because they're hopeless.
If that isn't proof that we need moral absolutes, I don't know what is. You know, you see a whole generation of kids, nearly 20% of them, wondering why they're even alive. You know, and I just want to touch on this, you know, well, that's your religion. History has proven, and Barnum has some research on this, and we could pull up some other studies on this, but Christians by far, when they are in power, are the most benevolent, the most giving, the most caring for other religions. When you pull up these other things like secular humanism and Marxism, it's every dog for himself. And when you have a moral standard like the Ten Commandments that Christianity is based on, it is proven, bar none, all the way across the board, Christians are by far the most caring for all. You know, we talk about inclusion. Christians are the ones that protect them, even though they don't believe the same way. They protect them, even though they want to kill us. It's a fact.
And yet they're called hateful and intolerant by some, and certainly by the left. So I have more questions, actually, for both of you gentlemen. And I know that I should have warned you it wasn't going to be a cakewalk being on this show, but there's something I think that John wants to interject here.
You are like the Segway King, I tell you that. You know, there's nothing better than treating yourself to some good homemade baked goods. I think of Over Heaven's Cakes. First thing that comes to my mind. Best cupcakes and cakes, it doesn't matter, hands down. Maybe you got a special occasion like graduation coming up. Maybe you just got a sweet tooth. Maybe you want to treat your employees to something really tasty. Find them, Over Heaven's Cakes, right on the north back side of the Grand Cities Mall here. They're open Tuesdays through Friday from 10 to 4, Saturdays 9 to noon. Again, graduation's not that far away. You might want to call them up now, 701-757-CAKE. You can email them at oforheavenscakes@yahoo.com. Hey, be a beautiful cupcake in a world full of muffins at Oh for Heaven's Cakes in the Grand Cities Mall. Hitting agenda back, we're going to let David Waterman kind of take control here. David?
Thank you, sir. So, Dr. Bartlett, this is something that I never discussed with you, but I will tell you, in seventh grade here in Grand Forks, I went to school with a girl who was younger than I was, and her name is Jennifer Ring. Her father, Ben Ring, I think was a professor at the university. He was an atheist. Jennifer went on to become the president of the North Dakota ACLU for I don't know how many years. But he, Ben Ring, sued the North Dakota Public Schools to because this these Ten Commandments were hanging on the walls, not this particular version, hanging on the walls of the Grand Forks Public Schools. So it was Ring versus Grand Forks Public Schools. And they were ultimately, he won in a sense, and they were removed. And the judgment was that, and I'm going to have to paraphrase because it's been about 25 years since I've looked at this. The judgment, the ruling ended up going something like this. The Ten Commandments, to hang the Ten Commandments on the walls of the public schools is unconstitutional because the students may be led to, and maybe you can quote it better than I, may be led to read them, to meditate upon them, and to obey them.
Mm. Wow, that'd be terrible. Yeah.
So, and yet, there's when it comes to separation of church and state, you kind of, I think, alluded to it earlier, the founding fathers, that phrase, separation of church and state, what is that, Article 1, Article 2, Article 3? Oh, no, it's in the Communist Manifesto. It's in the Communist Constitution in Russia when it was the Soviet Union. The words separation of church and state don't exist in the U.S. Constitution.
That's right.
But rather it says that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. And back in those days, establishment of religion was a synonym for denomination. Is that not correct?
Yes, right.
So in other words, they were saying that Congress can't say, we're a Presbyterian nation, or we're a Baptist nation, or we're a Lutheran nation. No, because then there would be, there could be, if not persecution, at least favoritism by the government towards any particular religion. Interestingly, shortly after that was written, Congress went and had a church service in the either House or Senate building that weekend. Mm. So there was never supposed to be any kind of prescription against the Christian faith. In fact, our founding fathers repeated on numerous occasions that the Constitution itself was designed specifically for a religious and a Christian people, and that it was wholly inadequate for the governance of any other. So it sounds to me like you're kind of agreeing with them.
With
the founders of our country.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. I mean, that's easier. Yeah. Well, you know, John Dewey, he had a plan along with others.
And who was, I'm sorry, who was John Dewey?
He was the founder of religious humanism in the United States, you could say. He wrote, as well as others, the Secular Humanist Manifesto in 1933. He and others signed that. And part of the strategy there was to not criticize Christianity, but to replace it with a more public religion. And so you can look at the references on the Plato section of the Stanford website. But that's really what happened. We've had a full replacement of that. And also we've had a decline in the churches over the years so that they stopped applying Scripture to all of life. They began limiting it because they were at war and they were not prepared for it, perhaps. Just a quick story, Fred Andre, President Reagan's Interstate Commerce Commissioner, he was the son of a pastor that circulated in North Dakota. He told me that all the good people left North Dakota in the 1930s. And so what he meant by that is people that believe the Ten Commandments. Especially the one on socialism, the Eighth Commandment, thou shalt not steal. And so basically the farmers couldn't farm because the land was too dry. They had an option of either take the government money or move somewhere where they could farm. And so the people that he was circulating with, probably the Dutch Reformed and I don't know, maybe German Reformed, others, they really used and believed the Ten Commandments and so could not, could not consciously violate those. And so they did leave North Dakota. So in a sense, that might be why we're fighting a little bit harder than the average.
So, Dr. Cabral, they left North Dakota. Can you just put that, make it really clear, really black and white? They left North Dakota because they felt that what was stealing?
Taking government funds.
Taking government funds.
Wow.
To run their farm.
Period.
Wow. And that's because government funds come from?
Taxpayers, yeah.
Taxpayers.
Yeah, so right. So it is stealing. So and you know, if you read the Bastiat's book on the law and others, everybody knows that wants to know that. So that you really have to realize that it is against the Tenth Commandment to take government funds for things that are not supposed to be what the government's doing, right? So if it's national defense protection, that kind of thing. So the general role of government, Romans 13, is to reward the good and bear the sword against the evil. So if it's not in those categories, it's stealing.
So just to make sure I understand this, the Constitution, which is the law of the land, the supreme law of the land in this country, designates what the government can take tax dollars from its citizens for and what it can't. I mean, it says we can tax you for this, 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 and this, but if it's not included, if an item is not included in that list, then the government can't legally take money from the citizens. And in that case, if they're not doing it legally, then it's stealing. Because the government does bear the sword. Is that did I get that right?
Generally. In a sense, the idea that the government is the law and the highest law is a tenet of secular humanism. Okay, so what if the government says something that's wrong, right? How do you judge that? In fact, in early America, we are still supposed to be able to judge both the facts and the law in a case, right, where the jury can. And so if you're told by the judge that, no, you just need to judge the facts, not the law, it's like, that's not American. And that's a Marxist view even in itself. And so what you use to judge what is right and wrong? Anybody?
Something like the Bible.
Morals, right?
It's got to be right. Yeah, exactly.
You need a standard.
The God gave us, right. So I'm sorry. I'll see if I can justify my earlier comment. In terms of the way that the government works, in terms of the mechanism by which the government works, the Constitution lays that out. And I believe that the men who wrote the Constitution did it with an idea of what does the Bible say that the government should be doing. And so they tried to, I think, embed biblical principles and standards within the Constitution.
Right. Yeah, the separation of powers, et cetera.
Separation of powers.
Because man is sinful in nature, and so you need a check and balance.
Yeah, right, exactly. So the legislative, judicial, and executive branches. So I want to get back to how this, where the rubber meets the road with public school and the Department of Public Instruction in North Dakota. We've been going down a path, it seems, for a really long time that's the wrong path. I think you said in 1926 there were warnings about the direction that we're going, and those warnings were not heeded. You've written in your I've got a little sheet about where you stand and how you see things going, and you said, I saw how public education has been institutionally captured by the far left and was being used to advance secular agendas. And then through educating your own four boys, you discovered and used many effective solutions to the education issues that we now face, or education problems. What does it mean that public education has been institutionally captured?
Yes, at all levels. If you think of what secular humanism is, okay, and so there's the table from Summit Ministries, summit.org. You look at the table, you can get a list of those types of things. So okay. Naturalism, moral relativism, etc. And then you can see that coming through in CRT, through emotional social learning, into the math room. And so the kids know it's a waste of time. The teachers know it's a waste of time. And it's hard to label because they changed the name, but it's a critical race theory idea. Now you could call it critical emotion theory or critical victim theory because it keeps morphing into something else. Mm-hmm. But that's one aspect. So you get the school board association teaching the school board members, and so they are captured in that sense. And we're starting in Williston, but other places we're looking for parents that want to meet to start a school board advance team. Basically, we're going to build, even now as the campaign goes on, is build a basically separate school boards that are just practice school boards, so that we get people outside the school boards that are just parents that get together and say, okay, how should a school board really run? Because what's being done through the school board association is keeping the system going as it is and putting the conservatives out of touch and out of action. Wow. So that would be the same thing with the North Dakota CEL, education leadership group that trains the superintendents. I've got testimonies from teachers that show that they are using the standard or the licensure for teachers to put the teachers out that are speaking up and bringing in CRT after the CRT is made illegal by the legislature.
You're saying they're eliminating teachers?
Yeah, the teachers, these groups, the Standards Board, as well as North Dakota Cell and the connections from testimonies from teachers, they are using the credentials of the teachers to put them down. You know, one example is a teacher was teaching the Ten Commandments in a Christian school, and he got fired. And I gave his story to the newspaper, so eventually I think that'll come out.
That doesn't sound very inclusive to me.
Yeah, we really should talk about Fargo schools, right, and the gender inclusion.
Yeah. So some of the things that I'm hearing seem hard to believe. I mean, I think a lot of parents would say, I don't think that's happening here.
Yeah, that's a good point. I can sympathize with that point, but I've been looking at it for 30 years, so it's super easy to see. Because you look at the results and what's happening. Not only the test scores are down, the student health is down, all the things that are happening in the schools, the transgender issues, everything's bad. But when I look at it, I know the philosophies behind it, so that's easy to see. You know, it doesn't take too long to study that. And then you say, well, how come they're there? How did those philosophies get there in the first place? Yeah. John Dewey's, his plan and beyond is to bring them through the teacher colleges. And so then when they do the training for teachers after, you know, continuing education, it's not about how to do math better.
So Dr. Bartlett, was John Dewey, was he just like a rabid communist, or was he actually part of the educational system?
He was part of the educational system. Was it Columbia University? But then, he was working with other people from England, Huxley, is it Thomas Huxley, you know, where they were deliberately, you know, trying to remove Christianity from the culture.
So you have an educator, someone who's in the educational system itself, who's official, right? He's,
yep, philosopher.
He's one of the guys, and he's now intentionally trying to move America and American schools away from the Judeo-Christian roots.
Yes, absolutely.
That made our country strong in the first place.
He wasn't alone, of course. In fact, another interesting one I can tell you about, and that is in the 1920s, Liberty Hyde Bailey. Through the extension services, the 4-H programs, and the homemakers clubs, he was the president of, dean of agriculture at Cornell University, and there's a book called "The New Agrarian Mind" that explains his philosophy to create a new rural society, and so basically to remove Christianity from the countryside. He was a rabid guy that wanted to get rid of every inkling of Christianity, and so we wanted to create a scientific based culture, and scientific is, you know, scientism and stuff is part of that secular humanism thread too.
So I'm assuming that he would think that Darwin's theory, for example, was scientific, which obviously it wasn't. I want to ask you a question though, but because I think that this is a kind of fundamental issue. John, you know, if I said to you, do you think that most Americans are honest people, what would you say?
Yeah,
Mm-hmm. I think that we, because that's a Christian world, that's a Christian ethic, Judeo-Christian ethic. Honesty is something that we take for granted, and we assume that other people have that same mm-hmm. value system, right? That to be honest is important.
John Dewey's view was that of pragmatism, and pragmatism summarized is whatever works is right.
So yeah. So that's what I was going to get to, because it seems like if you're both boxers, I'll be honest, I hate boxing, but I'm going to use it as an example. If you're both boxers, you come into the ring, you put on your gloves, you shake or bump or whatever you do, and then they ring the bell and you start hitting each other. But there are rules, right? Like you can't hit below the belt, you can't put metal inside the gloves, you can't do a lot of stuff like that. But if you're playing by one set of rules, and then this guy's playing by another set of rules, let's say his rules are whatever's going to win faster for me, that's what I'm going to do. So he's got razor blades, he's got heavy metal weights, he's got stuff hidden in his shoes, and you're playing by the real rules, that's not a fair fight anymore. I mean, even if you started off fairly equal in terms of your abilities as fighters. And so if the general public and most people that get involved in the system follow the rules, if they're basically honest people, and yet they're dealing with others within the system who say whatever works, in other words, lying becomes virtuous if it helps us reach our goals. then you've got a very slanted fight, right?
Yes.
And so
yes.
How do we, yeah.
There's an awesome illustration of this, the Milgram experiment. It's a video on YouTube, but it was from the originals, 1960s, after the Nuremberg trials. The psychologists were trying to figure out, you know, why did all these good people join the Nazis and kill others? You know, they were trying to figure out that. And so the experiment is in a room with an authority in a lab coat and then a person being instructed at a board that gives the other guy in the room a shock. And basically...
An electric shock.
And so then as the guy gives the questions to the other room, it turns up the voltage every time he gets the question wrong, and 50% of the people killed the guy in the other room. You know, so the guy was acting in the other room, acting like he was hurt. Yeah. And so that proved that the people follow authority... 50% of them, to the extreme, even beyond their conscience and what's right at all.
Wow, and that's shocking. Of course, that was back in when was the Milgram experiment?
1960s. Yeah,
1960s.
It's been recreated too on YouTube. Yep.
So thankfully, we've advanced way beyond that, and we don't have to worry about people following authority without thinking about it anymore, right?
Well, see, the problem is thinking at all, right? So if you got a public school system that's dumbing people down, you know, think of John Taylor Gatto's book and the entire system for standardized testing, and and there's a lot of reasons that the kids today and all of us have been dumbed down, not only through the schools but the culture. So we're not thinking, we're not understanding the time, so we don't know these philosophies that are hitting us. So then, because we can't think, we could follow authority even better, easier. In fact, that was the goal of the pliable workforce for the public school system from John.
Yeah, a lady I know likes to say numbed down and dumbed down. And I think it's really both of them, isn't it?
Sure. Yeah, it is.
Because people don't even, they're just numb to what's going on.
Yeah, they're so conditioned to following that authority, you know, from these indoctrination places like Jim is talking about.
Yeah. So what's the, I mean, there, I like to think of myself in one regard as a pragmatist, but on the other hand, just because I was interviewing Buckminster Fuller many years ago, and I asked him if he was optimistic or pessimistic about a particular thing, and he answered very curtly, optimists and pessimists are unbalanced people. I thought about that. Actually, that's true. That makes sense. It's better to be realistic. But I like to still believe that there's hope that we can turn this massive ship around and begin pointing in the right direction. And so clearly, Dr. Bartlett, you feel the same way, and Pastor Tim, you feel the same way, or you wouldn't be doing what you're doing right now.
Exactly.
That's right.
So how do we do that? I mean, first of all, I'll just say this. Your name will be on the ballot in the election in June.
Correct.
And so if you're watching, if you have children in the public schools, or if you have friends with children in the public schools, and you're concerned if you don't want... Oh, I'm sorry. Let me just back up before I finish that. If you're working with people who don't have the same values, or if there are people in the system that don't have the same values, who don't believe that telling the truth is important, and you have something like CRT, critical race theory, being taught in the schools, and you say to them... You go and ask them, an administrator, is critical race theory being taught in this school? And they say, well, no, of course not. We don't teach that here. But if they're lying, then, and you believe that they're going to tell you the truth, then you walk away and you say, well, there's no problem. They're not teaching it there. And then they start just changing the names so that you don't know, because it's still the exact same content under a different name, right? A rose by any other name. So, or in this case, the thorn by any other name. How do we, I think that people have to recognize, hey, these folks are lying. I mean, that's essentially because Dr. Bartlett, I'm just going to pull the Band-Aid off. You're saying that the parents of the students in North Dakota are being lied to by people who are running this current administration.
That would be a good summary. Sure.
Okay. So if you don't want to be lied to, you want someone who has a fear of God, because one day, Dr. Bartlett, you and I and everyone in this room and everyone on this planet is going to stand before God and give an account for their lives and what they did and what they didn't do and how they handled his commands to us. And so that should put a reverent fear in the hearts of every thinking individual. And so your desire is to live your life and to engage in society in a way that's going to be pleasing to him. Am I right on that?
Yes, yes. There's no other reason.
So, Marie Stewart says the parents are not looking. You won't find what you don't look for.
You won't find what you don't look for. That's exactly right. So if you want to see your children taught right and wrong in the schools, because they will be taught one or the other. It's not a matter of, it's new. We need to just say neutral. There's no neutral. It's right or it's wrong. They're going to be taught morals or they're going to be taught what's immoral. It's one or the other. There's no middle ground. Right? I mean, we could do a whole show on that. But that's, I'm just saying that's absolutely true. If you want them to be taught what's right, if you want them to come away from their public school education with an understanding of reality as opposed to there's no reality, I really urge you to go to the polls for sure, even if it's just for this one thing, and cast your vote for Dr. Jim Bartlett, because he is on a mission to change the current really toxic culture in the public schools and the toxic system that's in place that is corrupting tens of thousands of children, the children all over the state. And it's not going to be every child. You can say, well, I know some good kids. Yeah, thankfully there are. There's some that don't buy into all this nonsense. But there are a whole bunch who don't know their right hand from their left, and they're going to be confused, and they're going to go along with what they're told, and they're going to believe that it's true. So I want to give – I wish this was a three-hour program, because there's – Dr. Bartlett, you've got such a depth of knowledge about not just what's happening today, but the history – of public schools in North Dakota. And so I'd like you to give just some examples of some of the things that as the superintendent, once you get to that position, and I'm praying really that you win in a landslide, what are some of the things that you would seek to change immediately?
The way I'd look at it is the strategic vision would be including the elimination of all false philosophies.
Wow.
And so then at the bottom level, think of it as each school have a meeting with parents and leave out the teachers, leave out the school board members even to start with, and get the real parents in the room that have not been obviously indoctrinated through the system, and then put on the top of the whiteboard complete parental control and say then on the left, write strategic vision for the school. Goals, objectives for the school, and then we can get to budget. So then the parents start at the bottom. So I'm thinking of lean accounting. So Toyota production system is used. But the idea is to look at the parents themselves and say they're the customer, along with taxpayers. Say, okay, you guys are the customers here. What do you want? And so then then they might need help at first, but say, okay, how much moral relativism do you want? Okay, and let's put a number on it. Okay, moral relativism, let's figure $50,000 into that this year. Or if we want anti-realism, let's put a number on that. As well as the curriculum. Say, okay, we want to use the curriculum on math from 1974 that's not infected with the new philosophies. And so then, that becomes a teaching platform, first of all, to say, yeah, let's look at and understand what's actually going on here and put it to the numbers. So then the parents are in control. So if you think of it from the biblical perspective, the parents are in charge of education, not the state. So we got to get all of that apparatus out of the way, and the way to start that is at the bottom. So that's one thing we can do very practically. Wow. And so then all the systems have to be basically revised in a way that's going to actually put the parents as the place where the value is measured. Actually, one key point on lean is that once you identify what is the value to add, then everything else becomes waste. And there's
eight different types of waste. Wow. Can you share those with us?
If I remember some of them. So we've got movement, materials waste, inventory, talent of persons. I forget the other ones.
Okay, so inventory, talent of persons. I want to stick on talent of persons. What is that exactly?
Okay, are we wasting anybody's time and their talents in their as a teacher or as a student? You know, so I had to think about to bring up bus rides there.
Okay. So you're not, when you talk about getting the parents together, you're not saying get the parents together and ask them to come up with a curriculum. You're saying to listen to the parents and to identify these philosophies, these moral values that their kids are being taught right now, and saying, do you want this taught to your children? And then letting them answer.
Yeah. So if it's an atheist group, they can choose differently than another group. And then they would, of course, include the reading, writing, and arithmetic. But then that would sort things out really quickly.
Yes.
And very appropriately, too. So it's not like thinking of it as cutting the budget and all those things. You think of it as what are we really trying to get done? Start with the recognition that the parents are given God's authority to direct the education of their children everywhere, not just in the homeschools or the Christian schools. And so, therefore, let's acknowledge that and let's listen to them. And that's why they're not involved now, is because they're not being listened to. They're being bullied. They got a system that's just running right over them. And so they don't want to be involved, right? Like any of us, we don't want to be involved if we can't be effective.
Right. Pastor Tim, do you, what's your, if someone was to ask you, why do you think that we should vote for Dr. Bartlett, what would you tell them?
Well, you know, I love how his background is in education. He understands this, but is also, I love how he's got the manufacturing, he's got the engineering, and he understands what is needed to get something done for the best possible outcome in all directions. You know, going from a bottom-up approach instead of a top-down, heavy-handed. You know, I was also at that Republican convention, you know, and I was at one in 2008, and I swore I'll never go back because it was heavy-handed, it was top-down. Yeah. They shut down the group that was basically my generation that wanted to have our voices heard. I said, I'll never go back. But I see the things that are happening in our world today as a father, as a pastor, as a citizen of North Dakota and as a USA. I see that there's hope for our school systems, hope for our children, if we'll go with this kind of an approach. And I just see the wisdom behind a man like Dr. Bartlett as I can throw my weight behind that.
So I'm just going to ask a question, and I don't want to, I'm not trying to get nasty here, but the current superintendent of North Dakota Department of Public Instruction, while she's been in this position, while she's been in office over the last several years, has had, I mean, it's a matter of public record, but she's had several DUIs. I mean, she's been pulled over for driving intoxicated. And I'm just going to add, I want you to be really honest, Dr. Bartlett. How many times in the last 5 years have you been arrested for a DUI?
Yeah, I don't drink alcohol, so I don't think any.
How about the last 10 years? I was 20. Okay, so you've never.
No, actually, okay. When I was 5, I tried beer, and I couldn't understand why anybody liked it. like that. My grandpa gave it to me, and ever since then, it was like, why learn to like something that's not good for me?
Yeah, I think I tried that in junior high school, and I had the exact same response. I said, this stuff tastes like shoe polish. Why would anybody drink this?
But, well, not me. But that's it.
So, the issue here, I mean, we didn't talk about the falling test scores. We didn't talk about the fact that the education level of Grand Forks Public School System at one point was kind of the pride of our state around the nation, because at one point the students we were turning out in North Dakota could go toe-to-toe with some of the best schools around the country, educationally speaking, and that's no longer the case. I think we just moved from, what, number 24 to 28 nationwide. So not only is the moral value of public education not just declining, I mean, it's in the toilet, but the test scores are continuing to drop. Do you see a correlation between the lack of moral guidance in the public schools and the failing test scores from the students that are graduating?
Oh, absolutely. If you don't have motivation to do it, is a problem. And so why am I learning this stuff? That kind of question. Secondly, the testing itself is an issue. The normed testing is known by other countries to be ridiculous. Think of Finland, for example. They make fun of the United States because we're taking these short answer tests, which are known for dumbing people down. Mm. Or you look at John Taylor Gatto's book called Weapons of Mass Instruction, and it's deliberately designed psychologically to dumb Americans down. And so there's a solution to that, and I often recommend it to students, and that is the Bartleby Project, part of that same book. And it basically recommends to the students, right on the top of your test, I prefer not to take this test, and turn it in.
Wow.
And, you know, I would think, too, that North Dakota class size on average is probably a lot smaller than a lot of these other states that are now moved ahead of us as far as education and graduation rates and things like that. So, yeah, it's just...
Right.
Well, actually, here's another angle on that. The idea that if you have all of these agendas and social engineering going on, then there's less time to actually teach math and science. Or if you're teaching to the standardized test, right? Everybody's got this high pressure on them to teach the test, and it's extremely negative for the parent or for the teacher as well as the student, and it parallels what other people have studied in the 50s. If you add too much technical things to education, then you're taking away the ability to address history and philosophy and the things to help them understand the history of the world and themselves.
So when you say technical things, you're talking specifically about...
Yeah, I'm thinking of Gordon Clark's book, but basically the idea is if you bring in too much technical training to high school, junior high, and younger, then you're giving up something.
And what's an example of technical training, if you could just
Sure. If you do too much ag training or too much auto mechanics or something like that, so that they don't have time to really get a good grounding of the history and the truth of the world.
Wow.
Or know about government or the Ten Commandments, because there's lots to learn, right? And so if you're using that time on technical things, which you could also apply to teaching to the test or social-emotional learning and a whole list of things. So that's why I'm thinking once you get the parents together and figure out what they exactly want, it's going to give them a lot more time to get done what they want.
And so when you say finding out what the parents actually want, you're not talking about imposing something on them. You're talking about actually saying, hey, here are the options. Here's what's being taught here. Here's the way that this is being handled. Is this the way that you want it? And actually giving them a voice.
Yeah, I think it'll be pretty fun, actually, because then they will actually understand what they're getting, right? Because now everybody's in a fog. They just woke up a speck when they went through COVID and started watching their kids learn.
Right. And I've never thought about that before, the aspect of technical training. That never occurred to me, because that's precisely what happens at the university level, isn't it? I mean, you go and you study a specific field, but it's predicated on the notion that student learned the fundamentals in public education in K-12, correct?
Yeah.
The things that you need to have in place before you start specializing in a particular area.
Yeah. I have a doctorate in philosophy degree in engineering, but I never had one course on philosophy.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
That's good stuff right there.
Very good stuff.
Yeah.
Very good stuff. So John, you've been sitting there thinking about listening to these two gentlemen talk. Is there what can I just ask, what's your take on what you're hearing?
In a nutshell, I'm just going to say this, David. I am so glad I do not have children in school anymore. We had a guest on yesterday, I think it was, and it bothers me a lot because some of the biggest influences in my life were teachers, and they are to this day still, and I'm so afraid when the old school teachers, the few of them that are still out there, when they finally either get sick of it or retire because they've been doing it for so long, then it's really going to get bad. And that scares the bejesus out of me. I've got two young grandkids, and they're in Fargo. And I'm glad I don't have. I'd be one of those people, I probably would have got thrown in jail a couple of times just from going to school board meetings. You know,
you'd be one of the terrorist parents.
Yeah.
Paul, are we supposed to start early today? Bergstrom's out there.
I think it starts at 12:30.
Okay.
If you know people, I mean, you're Minnesota resident. Mm-hmm. So, but if you know people in North Dakota, based on what you've heard this morning, would you, if they said, I don't know, the school board thing, because this woman, she's got a lot of experience. She's been there a long time. Seems like she's kind of cute. Maybe I should, and I don't know, this bald guy. I don't know. What do I think?
Well, spend 10 minutes. Look at the research. Look at what's being shoved down your children's throats. And then listen to the bald guy.
Right.
All right? What do you want? People tend to forget this is our future. Well, whatever, bald guy.
Yeah, right. But
this is our future we're talking about.
Yeah.
And we're not leaving them in a good place right now. So, I mean, things need to change, and they need to change soon.
Are the things that Dr. Bartlett said, do they seem reasonable to you?
Well, of course, John? They do. Yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, if someone asked me, I would say in a heartbeat, are you kidding? No, vote for Dr. Bartlett.
Right.
Because that really, and it's not like it's going to be easy. I mean, you've got a long road to hoe, sir, if you're elected, and I do truly pray that you are. But I think you sound like you're up to the task.
Yeah. I've been in this kind of topic for a long time. It's easy and fun. In fact, there's a backup plan, you might say, or a root issue here, and that is, how do we get things done? If everything's against us, we use the doctrine of lesser magistrate. Okay, so that's the idea where basically you recognize legitimate authority and illegitimate authority. Mm-hmm. In other words, obey God rather than man, and there's no other option. And so then you just stand right there and say, you know, keep telling the truth and work through it.
That's a very good book, Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrates. So, Pastor Tim, and Dr. Bartlett, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Now, if this would have been next Tuesday, we could have went on and on.
But we've got another show coming on today. Well, you know what? I'll say this, if I may. I want to, Dr. Bartlett, as you go and do your work across the state and try to get the message out of what you're trying to do, I will extend a standing invitation to you to come back on the show and tell us what's going on and explain the things that you're hearing as you talk to parents and other people. And Pastor Tim, and you as well, I know that you both live about 3 hours away from Grand Forks.
Yeah, but, I feel bad for Pastor Timothy here. He drove a long way and didn't get to say a whole lot.
Do you have a last concluding statement you'd like to make?
Vote for Jim.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that was easy, huh?
Dr. Jim Bartlett, thank you so much.
You know, as we get closer to election time, too, think about it. We'll, for sure. Reach out to us first. We'll figure out if we've got this other show going on and we can maybe go a little longer.
Yeah, all right. Great.
And again, thank you to everybody for being in here today on Hidden Agenda, which, by the way, was brought to you by Redemption Shield.
Have you noticed the ever-alarming 400,000 cell towers that have gone up in the United States alone? How about the electronics that reside in every room of our homes and Wi-Fi that runs 24/7? 5G cell phones are carried in our pockets hours on end. Common complaints are ringing in the ear, sleep deprivation, palpitations, headaches, memory loss, and so much more. Redemption Shield is on the cutting edge of offering products that protect your family from electromagnetic and microwave radiation. Start protecting yourself now. Go to redemptionshield.com and get grounded and shielded today. Use code GFBS and save 10%. Redemption Shield.
Yeah, just go to gfbestsource.com at the bottom of the homepage. You can click the shield to order today, okay? By the way, folks, open invitation here from Grand Forks Best Source. If you're running for office, Grand Forks, East Grand Forks, it doesn't matter what office, and you want to get on the show here, feel free to email us, all right? We're at local@gfbestsource.com. We want everybody out there to be able to get their 2 cents in. Let the people know what your platforms are. Feel free, again, local@gfbestsource.com. Let's see here. City Chatters coming on here just a couple of minutes. They're going to start a little early today. Have a great day, everybody, all right? And we'll see you tomorrow. Remember to like, share, tag, and follow us. Use that notification bell on your smartphone. It dings every time we get a great show on like today. You know, the Grand Cities, they are grand. Grand Forks Best Source is giving them an identity again.